Next up, Bathrobes Pier's broadsides. Stay tuned.
In the sky.
Yes, it's Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides, and you are listening to Free Radio 89.3 FM. For the next 2 hours, you will be on tap with Uncle Robert Norris here. I'm Bathrobes, Pierre Robert, and I have a whole lineup of guests, including Red Top Robert Flory, John Stewart of Madhouse Exit, and hopefully a number of call-ins, including Full Heart Phil, who's been plugging away on the mall, or strumming away on the mall, with Jess Kidden and his latest Happy Host songs. We may get a call from Danielle of Needle Exchange. We will have a brief interview with attorney Brian Murtha, who's done some work around the field of child abuse, about the possible impact of the proposed countywide curfew law. We're also hoping for some other call-ins from different people, which I'll be discussing later. And if you want to call in, I want you. And you are listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz 89.3 FM, and the call-in number here, and the lines are open now, is 427-3772. So do give a call here. We want to hear you. If anything we're saying makes sense to you or seems like nonsense to you, in either case, give us a call and let us know, because we will put you on the air. No opinion is too crazy. No voice too soft. So give a call. Right now, we have a guest. And our guest is John Stewart. Hi, John.
Hello, Robert.
And John is an activist around issues of psychiatric abuse. How would you put it?
I'm an ex-psychiatric inmate. I'm closer to the mic. Robert's coaching me through this procedure so I can learn to do this board and have a call-in show myself. He keeps telling me to get closer to this mic. I'm an ex-psychiatric inmate. In case you don't know what that is, that's someone who's been locked up in a mental health facility, so-called, against their will, and been forced to undergo psychiatric treatment, or is someone who's in a prison who is forced to undergo psychiatric treatment. That's it.
Closer, he tells me. Closer.
Okay. Anyway, ex-psychiatric inmate doesn't... anyway, that's a basic definition. And what I'm concerned with is to warn people to stay away from the so-called mental health system. They're likely to get a psychiatric label that'll stick to them for life, and they could end up with the wonderful right of refusing psychosurgery as they walk somnambulistically in circles on a back ward at a state hospital.
Right. it's really one of the most underreported areas. Every day people are taken away by psychiatric authorities, and there have been particular concerns about the status of homeless people and psychiatric rights, or the rights of people under the so-called mental health system. I know that activist Jane Immler, who is a homeless activist who's no longer here, but was very much concerned with the problems that would rise if people were picked up and told that they're not having a home might be the basis for a 72-hour hold or a commitment to a psychiatric ward, particularly if their behavior was viewed as less than bourgeois. What's your view on that, John?
Let's see. How to get into this has to do with the cutbacks in federal and state monies for local community health department, community mental health, so-called mental health departments, and the consequent and the cutback in SSI monies for people with psychiatric labels, and the consequent loss of homes by people they can't afford them anymore, and the turning away from mental health units of people who go there for help. The circumstance now is you have to practically have a gun at your temple when you go, ready to blow your brains out when you go to the mental health system for help, so-called help, these days. The consequence of that is that people who are malnourished, people who are sleep interrupted, have their sleep suffering from sleep deprivation and dream interruption, all three of which there are numerous studies showing these problems result in various kinds of so-called mental illness symptoms, such as seeing things and hearing things, and the consequent stress and anger, especially the anger of living on the streets and in a society that is utterly heartless as regards people who are different. And as soon as you start hearing things, you find you're an incredibly different person. Anyway, the point I'm trying to make is that the system as it's structured, restructuring itself under these Christian fascists who are in control of Congress, the way it's restructuring itself is, I believe that they're headed for a what I call a psychiatric solution to the problem that they have of homelessness, so-called homelessness, which I call, as it were, economic refugees or people driven out of American society by poverty that these people have created. Anyway, the psychiatric solution to homelessness would be the innumerable people on the street, so that they decide to reopen the state hospitals, which have been semi-closed down for a period of years, for a number of years. They reopen them and they run them on a shoestring, which means they could fill them up with thousands and thousands of so-called homeless people. Several years ago, Senator Moynihan and Danforth fronted a Senate bill which would have raided the Social Security funds and funded regional psychiatric evaluation centers, which would have sent out psychiatric evaluation teams to evaluate homeless people as to their so-called mental health, and would have funded not SSI, but placement of these people in one of the various kinds of so-called what I call psychiatric warehouses or psychiatric prisons. Anyway, I hope that hung together more or less as a long answer to a brief question.
Yes. Well, I mean, it was a good introduction to, I think, your main subject, John, which is why you wanted to be here today, which is your concern that this the reopening of the hospitals may be the so-called solution. Question that is the solution, the final solution, perhaps.
Well, no, it's not. I would like to point out one thing. Why there's such a problem with any kind of psychiatric solution to poverty is that the psychiatric, what I call designer drugs, have devastating, debilitating physical effects upon people. I've been in a state hospital.
Tardive dyskinesia and such?
Right. Tardive dyskinesia is the arcane name for shaking all over, for distorting, uncontrollable tongue motions. Your tongue thrusts in and out of your mouth, your jaw is into chewing uncontrollably, your eyes periodically roll, you blink, your face grimaces, your hands are trembling, you have a shuffling gait to your feet. That's tardive dyskinesia is the name for that, which is the consequence of, it could be the consequence of 2 or 3 weeks on Prolixin or Haldol for some people, or it could be the consequence of 5 years or so. It's so terrible a thing that most people who, when I was on psychiatric drugs, I was so embarrassed to go out in public in the condition I was in that I stayed in most of the time. And most people do these days. It's like we in the psychiatric inmates liberation movement call it a chemical straitjacket. In effect, you're locked up in a chemical psychiatric drug jail when you're on those damn things. So The warning is stay away from psychiatry, psychologists, psychotherapists, all mental health professionals, especially the cop in disguise down on the mall, Dennis the Menace, who works out of the host thing. He's a very syrupy, well-intentioned, in quotation marks, person who understands what's happening in our movement and even calls himself an agent of social control, but beware of those people who come on to help you. They do have good intentions, but unless they can give you a guarantee that you won't be locked up in a state hospital 5 years from now wondering how the hell you'll ever get out, don't sign on for SSI.
Wow, that's quite a claim. I have an incoming call. I want to ask you some more questions about that, John, and particularly including whether any commitments that you know of that Dennis, the mental health worker on the mall, has used, and any personal experiences you've had with him or that you know others have had. But let me take this incoming call now.
Ground Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Hi, thank you for taking this call in the middle of such eloquent talk. Thank you, John. You're doing a wonderful job there.
Thank you.
I wanted to add to your message a special concern for young people who are considered minors, because they are at the mercy of, especially if they're homeless and out in public or visible in some way, they're at the mercy of that system you're describing just as equally as an adult, even though they don't have other equal rights to an adult. I've had two children that have been saved from themselves and so-called suicidal tendencies. In one case, it was pretty made up. So I have reports from the inside about how it doesn't go away once you get that label on.
No,
you know,
it's forever.
It can haunt you for life. And
really?
If you haven't even had the chance to start your own life, I think it's doubly ominous.
Right.
Now, I also wanted to comment on my own recent contact with the county mental health.
But before you do, Linda, why don't you let John say something about what you've just said?
Okay.
One of the things that's happening across our nation today is that there's insurance. Families get insurance, health insurance, which includes a paid visit to a to a mental health facility for children. So it's like teenagers all over the country are being locked up by their parents, who find them rebellious or out of control or in opposition to them in some way, and they activate their insurance policy to pay for the visit to the hospital. The kids go to these psych wards. They put them on psychiatric drugs, the insurance runs out, and they are miraculously released, no longer in need of being locked up behind in these semi-behavioral modification programs. And the kids are devastated as a consequence. They go through terrible withdrawal symptoms from the period on those psychiatric drugs. And during the withdrawals, they can have experiences, severe sensory, physical, and emotional experiences, which they may ascribe to their own mental state, and subsequently go back to a shrink for help, and then end up on for another period of stay on some kind of funds from the state or the feds. Anyway, it's a terrible world for children. There's a book down at the library by Peter Bragan and his wife titled The War Against Children. And he, in that book, tells in terrible detail the conditions of our children in America in relation to our so-called mental health system.
Yeah.
Indeed. What you were saying.
The other thing I wanted to say is, in my own personal recent contact with our own county mental health, they made it very clear to me that they don't see themselves as there for therapeutic reasons. It's not much of a leap of the imagination to see what John was saying about the
extra
vulnerability of homeless people.
What do they see themselves as being there for?
well, let me give you the situation. I went in there feeling suicidal, and the lady said, well, since you can explain yourself, I don't think you're suicidal. You're just afraid you're going to die. Go away. She wrote a little scrap of paper, a little post-it note, and handed it to me, and she says, work on these priorities. We can't help you because you're not, you can still talk. You're not beyond being able to be out in the world. You know, so that's the watershed for them. Is like, if you can't be helped, they'll help you. So in other words, it's a money-making machine.
Right.
You know, or a money-moving machine, some part of the money-making of the state. But my point is that, especially if you think about homeless people who are going to be looking for any way they can to get a cot or a safe place away from the germs or whatever, if they're ill, it can be very, very tempting to say, okay, I'll go along with your program for a few days or a week or something, you know, assuming you have that choice, you know, and you find out later you never get out.
Right, right, really.
All right, well, thank you, Linda.
It's also, well, you know, you see the police department getting more and more ways to just capture people, just pluck you out of the streets if they don't like what you look like or something. But the mental health, our state's laws about the mental health are one of the easiest excuses police have, because almost anything you're doing can be construed as aberrant behavior or unsafe.
Do you know anybody in the last year who's been picked up for that, Linda?
Well, yeah, I know this terrible, terrible story about someone you also know, Robert. I don't know if you know him, John, that has been harassed by the police, who ambushed him at the hospital after beating him with a club and
right.
The aftermath of the May riots a year ago.
Oh, yes.
You know?
Yeah, I saw him on the mall yesterday.
They made sure he got a mental health jacket. And that gives them the tools they need to continue to harass him for the rest of any time he's in this area.
That's a beating that the City Council and the Civilian Police Review Board, which meets tomorrow, by the way, or actually today at 5, has not investigated and will probably never investigate.
They're probably not going to get near it unless they're forced to. But the point is, his life has changed and altered forever, and he has no voice or say about how that came about. And if he did, who's going to believe him after they put this mental health jacket on him in the face of the other witness being somebody in a police badge and gun?
Right.
So it's pretty scary. So I'm really glad you have John on your show today.
Anything else?
Nope. I have to go.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Yeah, that... The fact that the mental health label immediately destroys your credibility, I think, is another significant aspect to all this as a public figure. But the question, I guess, that arises, and maybe it's beyond the scope of what we can discuss today, is what do you do when you feel one way or another upset, disturbed, in such a way that you are seeking some kind of help? What do you propose to friends to do as an alternative to a mental health system?
First of all, I suggest you regard your mind as neither mad nor sane, nor mad sane nor sane mad, but your mind, and that all experiences are, I don't know, let's see how to express this. The fact that you hear voices is, and you think you're insane, is an enculturated consequence of your enculturation in the Western European American male supremacist, white supremacist point of view as regards your mind. In American Indian cultures, they go on vision quests. The world of shamans, they encounter innumerable kinds of strange experiences. In the yoga disciplines, on the path of yoga, you people encounter visions, voices. If you read Muktananda's book, Play of Consciousness, you'll find strange experiences there. I'm getting to a point. The point is this, that strange experiences and people in on acid, people on marijuana, any number of other drugs, encounter strange experiences that our culture, that is to say the male supremacist, white supremacist, European American culture tells us we're insane if we have these kinds of experiences. Other cultures and other times allowed people to have any number of experiences without confining them, locking up them up, or calling them insane or mad or anything else, as long as the people were not violent in the experiences. And most people who have these kinds of experiences aren't violent. You aren't violent when you have these kinds of experiences, but you may be terrified. But the terror that you have, you should examine now, before you ever have any of these experiences, why and or under what circumstances it might happen, and make plans now for with friends to make it all right for you and your friends to talk about any experience that you may be having. You understand? If you're hearing voices and it's not all right for you to talk to your friends about hearing voices, then you should work now to try to make it all right. If you see things and it's not all right for you to tell your friends that you're seeing things, then you ought to try to make it all right with your friends to talk about that. If you're feeling desperate, if you're in despair, if you feel hopeless, you're hurt, you think about killing yourself, and it's not all right for you to talk to your friends about killing yourself without them thinking that you need help from a shrink, then you ought to talk to your friends about these subjects and try to make it all right for you to talk about any subject, seeing things, hearing things, killing yourself, without your friends thinking you're crazy and wanting to turn you into the shrinks. The point is to build a network of friends where it's all right to talk about all of these things that get you labeled insane, so that your friends won't turn you into the shrinks. The most worrisome thing about trying to kill yourself is that your friends, right away, they don't want to talk about it anymore. They want to turn you over to some damned expert. And let me tell you, the experts that they'll turn you over to are going to utterly ruin your life. If you're seeing things and are hearing things or having any kind of weird experiences or want to kill yourself, or you ever have, the thing to do is network within your own community of people so that it's all right to talk about these experiences and your friends will not turn you into the shrinks. Otherwise, you have an incredibly lonely road to hoe, as it were, and if you ever turn yourself into the shrinks with any of these problems, I can guarantee you that 10 years from now, you'll wish you never had, as I did. I was there 8 years as a psychiatric patient, so-called, on 8 different drugs. The last one nearly killed me. I was assaulted at Napa State Hospital and had a blackout. I woke up walking around on a locked ward. I'm telling you, stay away from the shrinks.
Yeah, I've heard that story elsewhere, and I second that myself. And I think, though, that this suggestion you give, John, is really, well, I mean, it's easier said than done, of course. Have you been successful yourself in building up such a support network? Have your friends been successful? Have you known people who are... What's the situation in Santa Cruz, you think, generally, for people that you know who have tried to take an alternate approach to personal crises when they come up?
We're making a comeback, as it were.
Good.
The Psychiatric Inmates Liberation Movement is coming back. We were a powerful movement in the mid-80s, so powerful that in Berkeley, our movement... at that time more or less called the anti-psychiatry movement, working in Berkeley, they got a ballot initiative passed banning electroshock. It was on the books for about a month before the shrinks went to court and got an injunction and overturned it, citing that this was a state matter. This was a state matter. So at that time, our movement was quite powerful. Inside of the locked mental health units, people were making demands for rights. The consequence of the strength of our movement was the establishment of the patients' rights advocacy movement. There's a patient rights advocate. There wasn't then. The protection and the federal laws, the establishment of protection and rights advocacy on a federal level and in all states, that was a consequence. The so-called Lanterman Petras Short bill was passed that was supposed to give us certain rights in the courts and so forth. But since that time, those reforms have turned out to be mere window dressing, and all of them have been more or less diminished in any kind of meaningful way the abuse and oppression that goes on inside the system. Our movement suffered a money assault, as it were, because there came federal funds to people applying for federal monies and state monies, and the mental health client movement was born. The mental health client, so-called the mental health consumer movement. The reformers dropped out of the anti-psychiatry movement and went and founded the California Network of Mental Health Clients and the local Alameda County Network of Mental Health Clients. And we even have one here in Santa Cruz called the Mental Health Client Action Network, which got funds from the local department. Now the feds the people who were the most radical at the time this was going on, the money was coming, were warning that, well, yeah, you think you can do your thing behind this money, and you find out that you've got strings attached, and that's what happened. They've got strings attached. And now they're finding their money cut back, and now they're reviving their radicalism. So at the present time, the, as it were, abolition movement, we want to abolish the mental health system. We don't want to reform it. We believe that strategically this is the only way our movement can grow, is if we take our stand, make our demands, stay separate from the mental health system, and talk to them only about their part, the part they play in psychiatric assaults, where they beat the hell out of people, strap them down on beds, and shoot them up with Prolix and various other things, or when they drag them away to locked mental health facilities. Psychiatric assault is any assault by a psychiatrist, psychotherapist, a psychologist, a mental health professional, psychiatric staff nurse, or psychiatric staff worker, when they come at you and say, well, you're supposed to do such and such, or you come with us, and you say, well, I don't want to, and they say, well, it's for your own good, you know, and you finally say, well, I'm not, and they drag you away. That's an assault, psychiatric assault. The whole damn system is founded on psychiatric assault. In Santa Cruz at the present time, we're making our comeback, as it were, and hopefully by warning people to stay away from the system, by building again the strength, as it were, with the numbers, and not appealing to the mental health system for any kind of aid or help, we'll make it.
Right. Well, let me...
I kind of wandered away.
No, it's okay. There is a second aspect that you were discussing there, which is the important organizing and political aspect to change the mental health system, as you put it. I was, of course, asking about how you feel that individuals who are seeking to confront their own problems, how successful have your friends been at that, and so forth. But that's such a broad question. That's really the subject of another show, and I've already gotten one call from Full Heart Phil, or Phil Free, as he sometimes calls himself, who's going to be giving us the update on the mall situation. In fact, the phone is ringing right now. Let me see if that's Phil. If it is, I guess I'm going to ask you to say a little bit more, John, about your publication, Madhouse Exit, where people can call if they want to help with or get information on these issues, and kind of let you sum up.
I'm going to be on the air Wednesday 2 to 3, and I try to do a phone call-in show then, and it's called Madhouse Exit, and I'll talk about it then. And I appreciate Robert letting me sit in here and run my rap It's practically endless, as you may have may understand. Robert's talking on the phone over here. Peace and struggle on.
I was listening to the phone. Did you give the number and the for people to call if they want some?
No, I told them to listen to my show Wednesday 2 to 3.
I do suggest you listen to John's show. That's John Stewart you've been listening to.
Well, there's another show. My friend does a show called Lunatic Fringe from, I believe it's on at 4:30 today. You can listen to that one also. That's the Psychiatric Inmates Liberation Movement.
So at 4:30 today, we have Madcap Morgan, I think. I don't know what she calls herself on the air. That's how I know her, doing Lunatic Fringe. And before John leaves completely, he's put on his hat. He's moving his chair back into the corner. It looks ominous.
Yeah, before I leave?
Did you mention Madhouse Exit and the publication that you're going to be putting out soon?
Well, I'm going to be out on the mall sometime with my zine, but I used to do an information table on the mall at the farmer's market. Anyway, Robert's got the phone lighting up, so thanks for listening. Right. Stay with Free Radio.
Yes, and do call Free Radio, 427-3772. We now have a caller.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Wait, don't leave, John.
Don't leave, John. We have a call-in question for you.
Is John still there? No, it's not a question, but I don't want him to leave yet. Is he still there?
Yes, he is.
I wanted to say first that it's good to hear John finally on the radio. Hope you do a show now.
Well, I've been doing
great. You're very well informed. I haven't heard you on the radio before, but I remember reading about it in the good times. Hadn't had a show yet.
No, I've been doing it Wednesday 2 to 3, but I've been doing tapes.
The tapes, yeah, but I mean, in the studio there, you sound really good.
Oh, well, thanks.
Heard the tapes.
Thanks.
Heard the tapes.
Thanks. Appreciate it.
Yeah.
Any other comments for our major guerrilla fighter against the mental health system?
Well, that's it on that, but I definitely am familiar with the psychiatric program down on the mall, how that ties in all with the hospitality program.
Right.
I've talked to the mall shrink a few times myself.
Right.
Did he help you out?
Yes, he did. He did, actually. We found some interesting things out, at least, that the police weren't telling us.
What did you find?
Well, there's... we sing songs on the mall, me and my friend Bob. And have a lot of trouble with the police and the hosts and the business association and all the yuppie factor on the mall. And we found out which song offended them the most from the mall shrink himself.
Right. You got the top psychiatric testimony on that question.
Yes, we found out, you know, which song, you know, we asked him, you know, well, what's the problem, you know, what's the real problem with us being down here and doing what we're doing? He says, well, you know, quite frankly, it's your songs. And so we asked him, you know, well, what do you mean our songs? Which song in particular is the most offensive? And it was an acoustic version of a song by Agroculture that we do called Because They Can. It talks about dogs licking their balls. I think that's the offensive part. But he informed us that out of all the offensive songs that we allegedly do on the mall, that was the most offensive. And so I thought that was the most help he's ever been for me.
I see. So, sort of a source of information.
Yeah.
Do either of you, before you leave, John, do either of you know if anyone in the last year has been committed to a psychiatric facility by a dentist?
No, I don't know of any.
Well, I would like to make a comment that somehow relates to that. And it's something that's happening before us right now. I heard a caller talk before about how they're making it easier for them to have more and more reasons to come and take you off the street. For whatever reason, they want to take you off the street. They've got lots of reasons that make it legal for them to do it when it's convenient for them to do it, to take you off the street. When you're going to be particularly effective in whatever it is you're doing that they don't like you doing. And earlier this year, the Downtown Business Association, the the Santa Cruz Police Department, the hospitality program, in the Downtown Business Association meeting, openly conspired to take a person off the mall.
Which person?
By any means necessary that they could find at their disposal.
Who was that person?
Skidmark Bob from Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Currently in
Jeff
jail.
Kidden, currently in jail. Food Not Bombs, you name it. Currently in jail from some of those warrants that came up about that time when they started their program on this man. And it's such a tangled web. They openly developed a program. When we had well-dressed people in the meeting that they openly talked in front of because they didn't look like rabble like the rest of us. They figured they were all clean-cut yuppies and that they could talk openly about what are we going to do about this guy that sits out in front of our shops and sings that shoplifting song.
Really?
The police then responded, it was actually Sergeant Seeley that responded, does he wear a Millions of Dead Cops t-shirt? One of the business members said, yes, that's him. And right away, they knew who he was talking about. Now,
Skidmark Bob.
Skidmark Bob. Skidmark Bob. And why did the cop think of Skidmark Bob? Because he wore a Millions of Dead Cops t-shirt and he was offended because of that? Is that why his name stuck in that cop's head? Is it because he sings songs like Police State? Is it because he sings songs about openly defying the system to the little shoppers downtown?
Probably so.
Definitely so. And after this program was started, and I was playing with Bob on the street, I watched it firsthand. I watched the hosts work on it. I watched the cops work on it. I watched people like vigilante shop owner Stuart Martin and a Santa Cruz police officer lie in a police report about the lyrics of one of Bob's songs, particularly Shoplifting, where he says, I want to go shoplifting at the Bookshop Santa Cruz, the ID building, the Cat and Canary, some of our businesses downtown that have been openly against homeless in the past. It's a free speech issue, but after the police and Stuart Martin conspired together and got their police report together, the lyrics read, I want to blow up the ID building, kill Stuart Martin, and kill Neil Coonerty. And then the police tried to charge the man with making terrorist threats.
Which is a felony.
Which is a felony.
Yeah.
When the terrorist threats didn't work, I mean, even the DA wouldn't go for that one. They still tried to pursue a disturbing the peace case.
They tried the same against me, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, and when the disturbing the peace case came up, I was playing with him, as a matter of fact. So I know explicitly what lyrics were sung and what lyrics were not sung. Even if he had said what they say he said, it wouldn't have been illegal. We still would have had a constitutional right to say those things on that street in front of the Tom Scribner statue.
What's the update, Phil?
I'm getting to that. But
yeah,
that's the end. That's where we are now, but this is how we get there.
Right.
This is a tangled web that leads to now, mm-hmm. with Bob sitting in jail.
Bob actually is coming up for a
Santa Cruz.
He's coming up for a hearing at 1:30 in which courtroom?
1:30, we're not sure which courtroom.
But his last name is Duran, D-U-R-A-N. So if anyone listening wishes to go down and be in the courtroom when Bob is receiving his marching orders from the judge, you can do that. That's 1:30 today down at the 701 Ocean. Is that the right?
Yeah.
It's right at the courthouse building.
Okay, so before I get lost here. All right, the disturbing the peace charge, it was terrorist threats. Bob went to the DA's office, talked to the DA. He wasn't hard to find. Mm-hmm. He was going to make himself fully available for this case. Went to the DA's office. DA said, well, we're reviewing it and we'll get back to you. Well, they did get back to him. They got back to him when he was singing on the mall. They got back to him with a warrant and they picked him up off the street and took him and his guitar away. and put them in jail and stopped him from what he was doing. They did it by legal means because it was a warrant. They did it with another agenda. They did it to stop him from doing what he was doing. And this is how they manipulate their little system. And now we get to hear where the man had been bombarded with warrants, but he still wouldn't go away. He was on Free Radio Santa Cruz, and he used a name on Free Radio Santa Cruz, Skidmark Bob, and that's where he's most known, with that name, Skidmark Bob. And now, interestingly enough, when they pulled him in on his most recent warrant, in the NCIC,